Hello there, and welcome to the Comic Book Tesseract, the only comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Jason Polieff. Joining me this week for the first time in quite a while, Justin Chalupka. Glad to have him back. Join us as we review and preview the world of comics, along with other facets of geek chic culture. Justin, how you doing?
I live. The rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated.
There were no rumors of your death.
Liar.
Okay, there was one rumor. I put it out on the netcast, and both listeners heard it, so.
As I've said, liar.
Greatly exaggerated. All right, so, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm on my fourth beer of the evening, so this is off to an auspicious start.
Good. So, you've got beer, I've got drink as well, and I think we're ready to discuss comics along with some other fun activities, so, let's go ahead and start it off with some of our favorites that we are sharing. You want to start off with the tie-ins, or do you want to save that for last? Since that's got one of your some that I know you'll be favoring.
Really, I mean, we talk about tie-ins, and specifically what we've mentioned, what we're mentioning is tie-ins for the Death of the Family, the Batman arc that's running right now throughout the entire Bat family of books. And really, the main thing I needed to say on this is Scott motherfucking Snyder.
All right, so we are going to start with this. And I tell you what, this has been really good. There are a couple of the tie-ins that I'm going, really, that was a tie-in. And in particular, the Batman Detective Comics tie-in had almost nothing to do with the main arc that's been going on with this. It almost didn't tie in at all. It was rather disappointing. I was really upset with that. You didn't read Detective, though. You dropped that one.
No, I was going to say, is Detective still supposed to be the 5 years behind current continuity, or no?
No, they brought it up to current continuity, so.
Okay.
It is. Yeah. Now, Suicide Squad has been pretty good. Batgirl's been really good.
Mm-hmm.
Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin was supposed to be pretty good.
The first couple of issues were kind of half tie-ins, and yes, half standing in, half standing out, and they finally dunked in and went full because they got the die-cut cover with issue 15, and it was a full-on Death of the Family story, and it worked really well.
Okay, cool.
And
you're not reading Nightwing, so we don't know what's going on with that. Batwing, I don't think, is involved, is it?
Batwing has not been involved. I am reading Batwing, and that stayed out of the Death of the Family arc so far. So,
well, it's outside of Gotham anyways, right?
Yeah.
So he's not really in Joker's sights anyways. Oh, but I did hear something this past week
that
finally gives a definitive answer on the whole DC continuity issue.
Really? What's that?
Yeah. This was coming from Scott Snyder, who was on Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman podcast this past week. And to paraphrase, he basically said they don't give a fuck. That was pretty much the gist of it. Essentially what he said was that the continuity for the entirety of the DC New 52 has been delegated to the individual groups that are within every single division of the New 52, such as, you know, the main books, the Heroes books, Justice League and whatnot, the Bat family, the Superman family, the Fringe, all these types of things. They've been given their own creative license on what, as far as continuity, they felt they wanted to keep and what they wanted to ditch. And how it all ties together, the way Snyder specifically said it was, the way they were doing it with the Batman family, is they left it alone. They're saying everything that has happened has happened.
With the exception of Tim Drake being Robin. He went directly to being Red Wing, according to the Teen Titans books, so that is a slight change.
Well, no, because that's a different thing, because the Teen Titans books are under Young Justice, not under the Bat family.
So, in the Batman books, Tim Drake was Robin. It's the previous to the 52 big setup. But if you go over and you start reading the Teen Titans book, that's an entirely different continuity.
From what he said, that sounds to be the case.
That is really screwed up. I'm sorry.
Well, I would normally agree, except he made a rather compelling argument of, from a writer's standpoint, they're looking at it as, just tell a good story. Don't let the continuity get in the way of a good story. Which, and even even Kevin Smith, you know, kind of took him to task on that too, saying, you know, look, you know, we're fanboys. This shit is what we live for. You can't just throw it to the side and say it doesn't matter. But at the same time, he also understood that he needed to take continuity with kind of a grain of salt and understand that if things don't perfectly line up, then they don't. That doesn't mean it should detract from the story that you're reading at that time.
Well, I mean, we're always willing to give some and flex with the, you know, continuity of stuff. But part of the New 52, we all felt that they were actually going to give us that continuity, that everything was interlaced together and was held tighter. And it seems for a large part that they are working for that. But you're hearing this story, it just is kind of like a big monkey wrench thrown in the middle of the DC continuity, especially when you realize that these books reach outside of the small families that they're in. Yeah, it makes sense that that's kind of what's going on with when you look at the Green Lantern books and the disappearance of Hal from the Justice League just happened to coinciding with his disappearance from Earth in the Green Lantern book.
Right.
And the introduction of the new Green Lantern as Hal is quote unquote dead because he's mm-hmm. missing. So there's speaking a little bit of a lineup there.
Have we heard anything if we're going to see Boz in the Justice League books?
Have not heard about that. I would not put it out, but the big thing going on with Justice League right now is the crossover with Aquaman.
And yeah, the Throne of Atlantis run that's going to be coming up.
Yeah, and of course, Johns has been writing Aquaman and he's writing Justice League, so that at least should all be one cohesive story.
Yeah.
I got to give him at least some credit for that.
Well, that's one of the things that Johns is kind of noted for, is being able to, one, revive old characters, make them relevant again, and two, really build these universe-spanning stories that pull everybody in logically and still be compelling without all of them kind of tripping over each other's feet.
And yet he's been stumbling with Justice League itself. So
yeah, which Aquaman, I felt, has still been going strong. So I almost wonder if he should not take up the Justice League book, maybe end up leaving that to somebody else, and instead focus on really being more of a character resurrectionist, for lack of a better way to put it.
Yeah, he's definitely brought back Aquaman, I'll give him that.
Yeah, he actually made Aquaman a badass again. He was never a badass in the first place, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was actually, interesting story, I was out at the bagel shop getting my bagel today, and was sitting with some people that I actually don't know, just happened to say, hey, can I have the seat here, because there's only so many shop seats in the shop.
Yeah, it's kind of tiny.
You know, they saw that I was reading my comic books and talked about, you know, when they were younger and reading comic books and remembering, you know, he remembered the first issue of Spider-Man, and she mentioned that she really likes Aquaman. And, yeah, these are people that are, you know, probably, you know, 60s to, you know, 70s, you know, grandparent age. And they're going, yeah, and they had just seen The Hobbit. They really enjoyed The Hobbit, so there's a good review. Yeah, I don't know what else they like, but they like The Hobbit, so.
One of our mutual friends said that she enjoyed The Hobbit quite a bit, actually.
Ah, wonderful. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I just didn't have time to get out there this weekend. I was driving home Thursday night going, I should see if I can get a midnight ticket, which I probably couldn't have at that time. And I was just falling asleep and going, no, I really can't stay up late to catch a midnight showing of this. And didn't have time to catch it on Friday or Saturday. So,
well, I've heard a very good review of it, and I've heard a good review of it.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. So, well.
Take it for what that's worth.
Alright, so we got a Hobbit review right there in the middle of our Batman discussion. But I actually think we're pretty much covered with Batman, because I think you sum it up with Scott motherfucking Schneider. You cover
the dude's most boss. I mean, honestly. He's just fucking boss. I have never seen a more creepy Joker than has occurred in this storyline. I mean, I would almost classify the main Batman book right now as a horror story. Oh. I mean, it's just scary.
And it's not just Batman. If you pick up and read Batgirl and Batman and Robin, what's been going on in there, I don't know how much he plotted out with the writers or just said, here's an idea of what's going on. Here's kind of where I'd like you to bring your, you know, family characters in this direction. But those books are echoing that horror story of what's going on. Even Suicide Squad.
Well, Suicide Squad definitely had that creepy factor, but I felt like it wasn't as meaty of a story as the main Batman line was. I mean, which is to be expected. It's only a tie-in, but even all in all to the main Suicide Squad storyline, it felt...
Hey, well, this issue actually...
cliche, maybe? I guess?
To some extent, but actually, I read the Suicide Squad before I read Batman, because I was saving Batman for the last of the Batman Death of the Family tie-ins. And reading that...
Yeah, that was your dessert, huh?
Well, but reading that and then reading Batman, the tie-in of what he was talking about with the psychiatrist that was visiting him, of what he says to her, even though it was more of a flashback scene, really sets up what was happening in the Batman book.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I see what you're talking about.
And so there is maybe reading it in the reverse order, you wouldn't quite pick up on it as much, or it might not have had as much of a moment.
Well, I think I actually completely glanced over it because I just didn't even catch it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's Joker setting up the big reveal that they do in the Batman book.
Yeah.
So, and maybe if you read Batman first, it wouldn't be quite as the reveal. That's one of the things is sometimes with these crossovers, the way you read them can really affect it.
Yeah, it makes the difference.
All right. I'm actually going to do a step on a little bit of a spoiler. At the end of Suicide Squad, there's a reveal about Harley. And what's happened with Harley in the past. Which to me, that was kind of like, ooh, wait, there's so many doors. And with the Joker, it could be such a mind fuck. The whole setup could be a mind fuck of what Harley sees, or it could just be, a mind fuck for the reader and going, oh, well, that explains a number of different things. And I'm wondering where they're going to go with it. Because I think they're going to make it actually part of the continuity. Mm-hmm. But yeah, do you have thoughts on that?
Well, here you said you're going to step on a spoiler, and you didn't spoiler it at all.
All right. I'll go ahead and squirt it out.
So screw that. I'm going to spoil the hell out of it.
Okay, you do that. You spoil the hell out of it.
So, I mean, seeing all the other past dead Harleys, or at least the reported to be past dead Harleys, like you said, I mean, I think they'll more likely go that second route, where the readers are thinking, oh, well, that explains a lot, because it gives them the opportunity to really kind of delve into that and explore how depraved Joker kind of really is.
He needs a Harley, but he's willing to take anybody that will fill that role.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be...
It's not a specific Dr. Harley Quinzel.
I mean, she is definitely Harleen Quinzel, which is the Harley Quinn that all of us know. So the past Harley Quinns were Haley Quinnance? You know, are they all variations on a theme, or are they just random people that decided to take up the mantle?
That and he nicknamed them Harley
better than any others, so she has become the quintessential Harley Quinn.
Right. Or, is it a complete mindfuck with all the chemicals that he induces them with that they never were a Dr. Harley Quinzel to begin with? Maybe the first one was. And now he's kind of implanted it in their minds, that dual psychosis of, I'm Dr. Harleen Quinzel. I'm Harlequin.
I don't know. I mean, inducing a multiple personality seems a bit far stretched, even for a comic book world.
It's an inception that they could play with. So
that's a possibility.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on. And what do you want to talk about next? Actually, let's go ahead and mention Cyberforce.
Okay.
We talked about this book. This is based off of the Cyberforce that had come before, and of course,
I didn't know that was a pre-existing property before this new run.
Yes, and the new run of course was kicked off. Yeah, the new run was kicked off, and actually, it's actually the third volume, but it used a Kickstarter project. So the first five issues, the first five issue arc, are all free. Thanks to the quick Kickstarter project, they raised enough funds. So if you're interested, if you've read Cyberforce in the past and are interested, pick it up. Issue number 2 just came out.
And I would say even if you haven't read it before, pick it up anyways. I mean, hell, the price is right.
It's a new arc. It's a new story. It's a new beginning. And what they're really doing is they're tying up
Sylvester's art.
Yeah, it's Sylvester's art. Well, it's
and
his
I said
covers.
His name right. Yes,
it's I his will. Covers, not necessarily his entire art. But
oh, he didn't do internal. I thought he did.
I don't believe he did. He may have done some, but
oh, son of a bitch.
But more importantly, they're tying up loose ends from the previous runs to set up for a whole new story heading forward. If they're able to, you know, get the sales that they can continue making the book. But for me, Cyberforce number 2 was really where it pulled itself together and pulled itself up and got off to a running start. One was a lot of ideas thrown out there, but never quite made it fully involving me into the story. Issue 2 did. And since they're free, go pick them up, because I think it's worth it, particularly now that I've read issue 2.
Yeah, I mean, with them being free, I think they're worth picking up. If they weren't, I don't know if I would be continuing with this. It's been an okay story, but it hasn't really been a whole lot to sink its claws into and really grip me yet. It's possible this might be a slow burn, which having the first 5 issues free, they're certainly able to do. And it's possible that they may really kind of drive it home near the end. I'm hoping that's the case.
Well, again, I think they're doing a bit of a wrap up on here are the villains from the previous arcs and where they've come to. Here's the Cyberforce of where we left them off, and we're rebuilding everything from here and reestablishing the Cyberforce as a new entity and moving forward. And I think that's what this really is the reestablishment of Cyberforce.
So it'll really depend on where they go next as to whether it'll be worthwhile to make it into a full-priced book or not.
Yeah, it's become – I think it's going to be – this is a transitional arc into introducing a new Cyberforce and, you know, new villains or, you know, target for them to go to. But, yeah, well, certainly for the price, it's worth it. You can't beat the price.
Yeah. Speaking of introductory, let's talk about Isle of Trouble, because this was the number one issue for this week.
This was fun.
It really was. It's just a straight-up entertaining, nothing particularly cerebral about it. It's just a flat-out fun, interesting, tongue-in-cheek, self-admonishing book.
Yeah, and it really does, you know, kind of, you know, spotlight itself. And, you know, there's actually a scene where one character's walking away flipping a bird to another, and they do a nice little circle and blow up of the bird being flipped at the other character.
So you know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, it's that humor of, yep, here's exactly what's going on. And you could tell from the body language, you didn't need that extra little oomph. But they did it, and it added humor to the scene.
I will say a couple interesting things on this book. One is the cover stock is the same as the internal, and it's that pulp paper kind of stock for the cover.
Yeah. Not quite a newsprint, but much closer. A much more refined newsprint.
And number 2, the cover itself is actually the first panel of the comic. You turn to the first page, and it's continuing right where the cover left off. So you actually have the internal art and the introduction right there in the open for you, which I think is kind of an interesting idea. I'd be curious to see more comic kind of take up this idea of having the cover be that introductory hook, really, to the book.
Yeah,
I just don't know who could really get away with that, though. Especially since, with dealing with things like Diamond, where they show what the book's going to be, what, 3 months in advance?
Yeah, particularly if you get a cliffhanger ending. Although Diamond sometimes they'll put up, you know, black markers or not final covers in the books, just, you know, cover not revealed. They've done that, you know, in particular, you know, when they got a surprise cover that's coming up. In this case, though, the book, you know, not just the art, you know, we talked about a little bit about how they use the art to make the fun, to add an extra punch with it. But the basic story is of a girl who is, doesn't necessarily have the best moral compass. She's in trouble. And so she's trying to get away when she discovers she has powers. And she can use these powers to get herself out of trouble. Only but to instead, dig herself into deeper trouble.
Yeah.
The story itself, aside from the addition of the powers, is actually kind of along the lines of what's the Tarantino movie? Crazy Love. I'm in trouble now for not remembering this. True Romance. That's what
I have
it
no
is.
Idea.
Which.
Oh, good. That was Tarantino, really?
Yeah.
The one with the Christian Slater?
Yes, Christian Slater. Yep. Does it not remind you kind of that True Romance?
Oh, it completely does.
Yeah.
I just can't believe that I didn't realize True Romance was a Tarantino film.
Yeah. All of a sudden the dialogue goes.
How did that?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it completely makes sense in retrospect.
I don't think he directed
it. Together in the first place.
I think he wrote it, but I'm not positive he directed it.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not taking the time to look that up put another way, if you remember the character Ace, Christian Slater's character in Stand By Me, if you were to follow that character as opposed to following Gordy and the group of friends, yeah, Ace was the guy that was driving the car, got into a race and played chicken with the car in the oncoming lane to win the drag race.
Yeah.
That's the kind of character that we're following in this book. Self-destructive.
Wait, I think you said Christian Slater. You mean Kiefer Sutherland?
Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland. You are correct.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm getting my actors mixed up here. The Kiefer Sutherland character, driving the car with his friends, smashing the mailboxes because they can, because it's fun, not because, because they don't care if it hurts other people. They're out there to have a good time and whatever is going to get in their way be damned. That's kind of the feel of this character for me. And I really enjoyed this book. I'm looking forward to future volumes.
Yeah, I would think this is probably going to be a short run. I mean, Image is fairly well known for that artists come to them with, one art type things.
Well, I mean, they're creator-owned properties, and a lot of times the creators are going, I've got this story to tell.
And once they tell this long to do it, so.
Yeah. Image gives them the opportunity, the platform to tell that story. When they're done, they're done. So, actually, let's go ahead and discuss another book that is fairly brand new. This is another one of those one-offs, and that is Colder.
Yeah, this is from Dark Horse instead of Image, but this will be a 5-issue run. Number 2 came out this month. I read number 1 quite a bit after you did, because you dropped it on my lap and said, here, you need to check this out. And I just didn't have a chance until fairly recently. And I do have to say,
I'll take it that was tasty.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, my. I forget who mentioned it, but I did see a review of Colder that somebody else did, where they mentioned the main antagonist in this, who's a character named Nimble Jack, and character really is the best way to describe him, as just being the creepiest. I mean, I'm not going to say Joker level, because I already used creepy to describe Joker.
It's not quite a Joker, though. It really
is. But it's pretty damn close. I mean, he's up in that echelon. I mean, he's pushing close to royalty here.
Yeah, but there's enough of a twist on the character, particularly for the setting that they've put him in, that I can't classify him as a Joker. Like, I look at him and I clearly see a distinction, whereas with, we just read a book with, Red, something. And when I read that book, I go, wow, this is a reinterpretation of the Joker from, particularly the Heath Ledger Joker from the Christopher Nolan movies. And that was a book I borrowed from you, and I'm just drawing a blank on the title.
Bedlam?
Yes, Bedlam. That was a character that I looked at and go, wow, this is a Joker put in a different universe. With another with another cast of characters and called something different. You don't get that with Colder.
I don't know. I would put the Bedlam villain more as like I would see him more as like an anime villain. Like that's who he reminds me of.
I could see that as well.
Over the top kind of, overly cerebral. I'm thinking so many steps ahead of you that it's, beyond human comprehension type thing.
Yeah. I can. But again, but the other thing is with Colder, Nimble Jack is a supernatural character as well.
Yes.
And maybe that's what the biggest difference is in how he plays with the psychosis of those around him, is that he's supernatural. He's kind of almost like Mixel Spitlick and the Joker. It's kind of.
Mixel Spitlick?
Mr. Mixoplex?
Yeah, I just never heard Spitlick before. That's kind of entertaining.
Actually, if you watch the animated, when he, the animated Superman TV show, it's pronounced Mix L Spitlick. He actually goes through and changes the shapes as he's doing it. Mr. Mixoplex, if you will.
Yeah.
It's kind of that character and the Joker rolled into one.
Yeah, that's really a kind of good way to put it. To describe the actual plot of the book, and let me find out if you had kind of the same take on this as I did, because this is really in that realm of insanity where comprehension, I think, will differ from person to person. My overall take on this is that Nimble Jack and some of the other creatures that we saw in the second book are basically feeding off of psychoses, or are feeding off of the mental imbalance that's created when people do start to go insane.
Yes.
That's
was my take.
That I got out of it, but okay.
Yeah, that's exactly where I got it. The cover of the original cover of the first issue that I saw is of a guy with his hand going up through in front of his teeth, underneath his lip, up and coming out in his eye, and that. That feeling, if you can imagine that, is really where this book goes. And book two just pulls it in tighter.
Oh, cranks it up.
Yeah, it really is just so much more powerful even in the second book. It is creepy, it's horrid. Oh, and
But on top of that, it really does keep it very cohesive. It's a tight story. There's not a whole lot of varying off on to other side topics. So it's a very, I think this will be.
It's easy to follow because it's a tough subject matter that's actually very easy to follow in the telling.
And with this being only a 5-issue mini, I almost wonder if this will be best consumed in graphic format.
It may, but I'm not waiting to find out.
Nope.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move on to Iron Man. The Marvel Now relaunch of Iron Man.
So this is the last step of our shares. Are they doing this one twice a month?
It certainly looks that way based on the fact that I think we've had, this is issue 4 just came out this week.
Yeah. So, that's what I thought too.
You've been picking this up. I've been borrowing it from you to read it and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I found this interesting in that it has an overarching storyline, but each one so far has really kind of felt like a one and done.
Actually, what it feels like to me, and I've only read the first two, but what it feels like to me is a serial. Like a 1950s movie serial where here's today's adventure that leads directly into the cliffhanger that's going to kick off the next adventure. It's the type of movie that Indiana Jones was based off of. And actually, if you watch Raiders, and I noticed it now in one of my more recent rewatchings of it, if you watch Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, it's a series of small vignettes that lead you into the next vignette. And each issue appears to be a one-and-done arc leading into a whole larger arc of what's going on.
Yeah, see, I've never seen Sky Captain, so I can't really speak to that.
I know a lot of people panned the movie. It was done almost entirely in green screen. A very retro look, that era. And I thought it was great. I really enjoyed the storytelling, the movie. I know some people didn't. And a lot of people felt it was choppy because it's a movie that has sequence. And that's really what it was.
Yeah, I knew people that hated it vehemently. Like, they wanted to like it a lot and just couldn't.
Yeah. I part of it, again, was that feel of here's an event. Here's an event. Here's an event.
Yeah.
And for some people, it felt really choppy, but it really is a movie that you could literally chop up by those events, show one each day, and you could watch and get the story from. And I think that's where you kind of feel that we're getting from Iron Man.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is because and you said you haven't read 3 and 4 yet, and it does continue in that style. The overall arc is having to deal with extremists. And specifically the woman who created the extremists, which was Maya something, an old flame of Tony's, has been murdered. And her extremist has been sold on the black market to a bunch of different buyers. And so now Tony is going after them and essentially exterminating them one by one. And because each one is almost kind of acting like a monster of the week, you do get that choppy individual feel to it. And each one is completely self-contained. I mean, it starts with, okay, here's where this one is. He goes out, he does his thing, and at the end of it, he has finished it off, says his witty quip as he walks off into the sunset, and that's the end of the book. And I think actually every single one of them has ended with the end. So, if for some reason you don't like that particular style, then you may not like this book. But the story overall, I think, lends itself well to this method of storytelling. So we'll see where this arc wraps up and kind of where they want to go with it from here, if they're going to keep it in that fashion or if they'll actually have a full-on contiguous storyline that they want to go off into in the next arc.
What I like about this is you can kind of pick it up mid-arc at any point and jump in. Yeah, you don't have to have read the previous 3 or 4 issues. Yeah, you'll miss on some stuff, but you'll have a complete story told to you. And I miss that a lot. And actually, one of the books I'm going to talk about when we go solo, or at least just mention, is Legends of the Dark Knight, because they're doing one and dones. And I love it. You have to have an idea of, okay, this is who Batman is. Let's hear a story about him. And that's what you get is a one and done. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really like about the Legend of the Batman book. And that's what you're getting with the Iron Man right now is a jump on at any point. It's not written for a trade. The arc itself might cover a trade, but each individual issue can be picked up and read and enjoyed solo.
Yeah. And with the Marvel books, you have that little story thus far thing at the beginning that a lot of the DC books don't necessarily. And that's really all you need getting into each one. So you're right in that it is very easy to pick up kind of midstream. But since you mentioned the solo books, why don't you go ahead and jump over to yours and talk about the Fury book that you wanted to mention.
Okay, yeah. Fury is the next book. It's issue 7 of Garth Ennis's story of... It's actually the Max version, so it's the Marvel Adult Readers line of Nick Fury and his time back before he became an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And this is the beginning of a new arc with Frank Castle as the guest star. Now, Frank Castle is better known as the Punisher, but this is Frank before he becomes a Punisher, back when he's actually still a soldier. This particular book is taking place in Vietnam. So you got a new arc starting up with this issue, so certainly worth picking up. If you're a fan of Nick Fury, you want to find out more about his early days, or if you like Ennis's work, which I really do.
That's kind of interesting. They're still putting Fury and Castle back in Vietnam, which would put them in their, 50s, 60s right now?
Yeah.
And they're still supposed to be out there kicking ass?
Absolutely. Well, the other thing is, Marvel, as part of the Marvel Now, is doing Nick Fury's son coming into S.H.I.E.L.D. The promos had the new Nick Fury, Nick Fury Jr., throwing the cards out there, revealing some of the key players in the Marvel Now launch. Fury... they're transitioning from the traditional Nick Fury to the new version of Nick Fury, who is half black and looks surprisingly a lot like Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
And they did have a mini arc or mini series that explained where that Nick Fury came from, and they're going to be switching over the Fury role. Going to pretty much be the same person, same character. But making him more resemble the Nick Fury character from the movies.
From the Ultimates universe.
That too, which is the one that the movies is based off of.
Yeah.
But making that the primary Nick Fury in the Marvel universe. Another one that I'm going to talk about, which I'm going to be bringing over for you to read, is The Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay, this is the end of Amazing that's going to go into Superior, I think is going to be the next run that he's on.
Is it Superior?
I believe so.
Yeah, it's going to be continued in Dan Slott's new series on Spider-Man, whatever the adjective is before Spider-Man, Superior, Savage. But there's a big twist that occurred in issue 698.
Yeah.
698, 699, and issue 700 will be the last issue of Amazing Spider-Man. This story has been really good. It's a very interesting twist on it. And they did put out a 699.1, which is more of a backstory history for Mobius. And it has really very little to do with Spider-Man other than it takes place concurrent with the events of 699. But it gives you the history of Mobius and is leading into the new Mobius series that Marvel's going to be doing as part of the Marvel Now. So if you're interested in the Mobius character, the living vampire, and you're looking at a jump on point, want to see where Marvel's got the character positioned now, Amazing Spider-Man 699.1 is a good read. I can't wait for 700. I want to see where he goes with this to lead into the new Spider-Man series, because the sky is not the limit, because we're going to go to Mars or we're going to go to Titan or someplace way out there. It's, yeah. There's no reason why this story's got to be held off.
So you're saying you're excited?
Just a little bit. It's going to be real good. Another book I'm just going to briefly mention is Clone. Issue number 2 came out, even mm-hmm. better than the first.
I did finally read the first one, by the way.
Okay, what was your opinions on the first one?
I thought it was pretty good. It's certainly a story idea that is not unheard of. It's not necessarily uncommon, but
they actually start to play with it a bit more and make it a bit more of its own story in issue 2, which is part of the reason why issue 2 is better. But unfortunately, you need to set it up in 1. All right, and you were saying?
Which it does. It sets it up as really, I don't want to say cliche, because it doesn't go quite into that territory, but it's, you'll read it and think, okay, this isn't anything new.
Right. I think it fights hard to stay away from being cliche, though.
Yeah, it definitely does.
That's one of the things that brought me in to go, I'll give it issue number 2 to see where they can go with this. Because there's a couple of other books that I've been reading that deal with clones, and very much some of it feels the same. And I'm wondering, where is this one?
Spider-Man after all, so.
Yeah, I mean, how many clones has Parker had? So, been looking forward to that. Another one that is a brand new book just came out is Change. It's issue 1 of 4. I picked this up looking at it, and the cover art kind of reminded me of, what was the astronaut one that you were reading by Azzarello?
Spaceman,
yes. The art kind of reminded me of that, from the cover. So I picked up Change, and I'm not sure what it is, but I wasn't very happy with this book. I know part of what it was is it was very difficult to follow. You've got a character who is a rapper trying to produce his first movie. You've got a writer who was writing on the movie, and you've got a spaceman. And I don't know what the spaceman has to do with the rest of the story.
Spaceman, like part chimpanzee, like the Azzarello book spaceman?
No, I don't think he's part chimpanzee. They haven't introduced that yet. It seems just an astronaut.
No, I just figured I'd ask.
Yeah, I know. You got the rapper who's angry with the writer who, there's something going on between the writer and, the people that have hired her that they don't want her working at or something. It very confusing, as far as what's the story, what is tangential to the story, where it's going. I found it really hard to get in and follow the story of what was going on. I don't know if I just need to read it again or if, but it just didn't catch me. It didn't hook me and felt, I don't know. I just couldn't, I'm probably not going to pick up the second one. I really don't think I will. I think it was too confusing and not, the story didn't tell itself well enough.
You don't think a continuation will be able to kind of abet that initial distaste?
I think the way that the writer wants to tell this story, I don't know that it's going to necessarily become that much clearer, that much. I think things will become clearer, but I think it's going to be more pain along the way. And I don't know that it's worth it.
So, I mean, would people that enjoy those kind of search for meaning books get more out of this?
Quite possibly.
Okay.
I'll let you borrow it, see what you think, because it's definitely interesting. In fact, that's one of the things that's neat is you've got, a rapper and who's trying to be a movie producer and a screenwriter, and that's very much grounded in the reality of this world. And then you've got this astronaut somewhere in space that I don't know if it's part of that story where, how that ties in. As a 4-issue, that's something that they can easily, bring in later.
Mm-hmm.
But just the whole presentation of the story of here's something. Okay. What did that have to do with this? And.
Okay. So just, it's not very cohesive at this point.
Yeah. Some of it's very much like reading poetry. Okay, what does this mean? Yeah.
I'm trying
to understand just, the dialogue on the page, what it means is, what it stands for. So.
Right.
It felt too painful to read.
I gotcha.
Now, another book, from this one from Dark Horse Comics. To Hell You Ride. Now this.
I was thinking about picking that one up, actually.
Interesting book. I like the place that it's the setting for the book a bit more than I liked the story so far. Yeah, it's a 1 of 5 and it takes place in, it opens up during the 1880s as gold is found in an Indian burial ground. And the natives, in defending themselves, place a curse on the ground and on the gold miners that have come to try and find their fortunes there. And the curse comes back in a more modern era with a down and out Indian who, rather stereotypically is a drunk and roused about, kind of guy that seems to have probably been in jail for drunken disorderlies more so than held down a steady job. I kind of like that, it is focusing on something we don't hear a lot about with the Native American culture, but so much of it seem, and I don't know if it's my perception but it seems like it's very anglicized versions of the Native American culture that it's telling in here. I don't know how well it's researched. So it could be, fairly accurate. But I enjoyed it just enough to make me go, I should check out the second issue. But I don't know that I'm going to get any further than that. I like where it's at. I just don't know that it's going to be able to push itself forward and have enough of a hook in a story that is going to make me want to continue.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it'll be one of those books that, like, you look at every week and go, I don't know if I want to read that. Yeah. And then after you're done reading it, you go, okay, I'm glad I read that. There's been more than a few books I know that I've had that same type of experience with.
Yeah, I've had a couple of books that I'm going, okay, am I going to drop this book this week and read it and go, it's going to stay another week. This one more of the ideas and the setting of, that use of Native American curses and culture. Mm-hmm. That's really what's been keeping me in there a bit more than the story itself so far.
Okay.
I like that world. I want to see more stuff in that world. And because there's not a lot in there. It's kind of like, there's only so many Westerns comic books out there. So if you want to read a Western, you got All-Star Western. This was kind of there at the beginning. There's only, sometimes if you have a Jones for a certain type of thing, you go and see something that's not quite as good because it's what's offered as opposed to, the best thing out there.
Right.
And I'll talk about The Hollows last. This one I really did enjoy. Some of the aspects of the story are not too unique. It's about I don't want to say post-apocalyptic world, but certainly a future where pollution has destroyed the cities and science and technology have risen us up and above. So you've got the people that the dual layer society of the rich and privileged living up above and the not so privileged living down below. And when one of the rich goes to, get some supplies because while they're rich and privileged, there are still some things they don't have. And so he goes down to the lower level to find that stuff. And that's where the story really starts to sing because you start to see there's some heart in the, in here with the characters, that they're presented. And yeah, so you're dealing with, you know, the character that doesn't want to care about these people. And you can see he's trying not to care about these people that are less fortunate than he is because he's got his own troubles, even though he's living in a much better life and society. It's still a difficult life. You know, he's still, you know, struggling to get food for his wife and kids. You know, even though he's got a job, you know, he's trying to get as much food as he can. And then he sees people that are just worse off than him and he's trying to say, I can't care about them because I have to worry about myself and my family. So there's some really interesting dynamics and it's certainly much more about who these characters are and what's presented with them. And the Hollows, which is referenced in the title of the book, refers to, creatures that are actually, somewhere between soul suckers and zombies that live on, in the lower realms and terrorize the people that live there, that suck out the souls, the living energy of the people that live on that level when they get caught by a Hollow. So.
That sounds comforting.
Yes. Sam Keith did the art, so it's got some real, nice art. Sam Keith probably best known for the Max, which he did. Number of Batman covers, so.
Cool.
So certainly enjoyed that. Now, you got a couple of books, a bit more mainstream than the ones that I was reading, but,
Yeah, and really the only reason I wanted to mention these was really by how much they kind of let me down. One from each side of the street. On the Marvel side, there's Deadpool, and on the DC side, there's Phantom Stranger. And both of these, I didn't necessarily have, you know, stellar expectations for, but I expected both of them to be at least a little bit better than what I've gotten. Deadpool is being written by Brian Posehn, very well-known comedian, as well as a couple of the names that I do know are famous in their own right for other reasons that I just don't remember off the top of my head right now. And while the story has been at least entertaining, what I've come to realize in it is, I don't want to say it's going overboard because that's what a Deadpool book is supposed to do. It instead is, instead of making the quips and the jokes where they're relevant, it instead feels like it's trying to shove a joke into every single panel, whether it fits or not. And that overabundance and that feeling of trying too hard has just brought the entire book down for me, the entire series down for me.
So they were going for quantity instead of quality.
Yeah, and the stuff that's there isn't bad. If it was better delivered, it would be very well received. So its overabundance is its downfall.
I kind of wonder if maybe they had the more traditional comic writers write the book and then have Posehn follow through and mark each panel with a joke.
Possibly.
Yeah, as opposed to having him more actively involved with the writing process to set up and deliver, set up and deliver.
Yeah, whereas instead it's like every single panel, depending upon what the action of that panel is, there's the jokey quip in that particular one. So,
right.
On the other side of the street, you have the Phantom Stranger, which during the end of the New 52's first arcs, so the Justice League arc had ended, the initial Batman and Aquaman and all those books had done their first graphic worth of storytelling. You then had these annuals and zero issues come out around that same time, and the Phantom Stranger was reintroduced on Free Comic Book Day with I suppose I can call it a zero issue, for lack of a better term, that introduced not only the Phantom Stranger, but also gave hints at both the Question and this new character, Pandora, that's supposed to be this big kind of, linchpin key character in the DC universe going forward. And they made the Phantom Stranger out to be this really kind of super badass kind of character that was supposed to have his own large influence over the world. And in reading this series so far, I feel like I've gone back to the 90s comic boom style of storytelling, and it just doesn't fulfill me at all. I mean, it feels like a bunch of comic fluff, like the kind of thing they would throw out there just because, well, we have this title, we got to put out a book this month. And there's so much more I feel that they could do with this character to make him compelling, to make him somebody to fear in this world, in this DC universe. And instead, they're giving him Monster of the Week type crap.
Well, I think they've also been trying to give you a emotional connection to him by showing you the family side of him. Yeah, with the Phantom Stranger. Yeah, they're showing his family life.
And I can understand that. And especially the idea that the Phantom Stranger, who's supposed to be this world traveling, never stopping type character, that he has created this family that you know is going to end up just dissolving in this giant implosion of crap. I would almost wish that they would leave villains out of it completely and instead just focus on a more kind of character-driven piece where he has to interact. I think the best way to put this, if they would have taken this character and given him a sort of Animal Man treatment, it probably would have worked perfectly. Instead, they're doing it as an action book, which I understand was kind of part of the point of the New 52, is that they wanted to have all of their titles be these kind of big action blockbuster type things. But I don't think this is where that character belongs, which greatly saddens me, because I feel like they're going to end up canceling this character after he's played his little part in this section of the DCU universe new telling.
Leading up through and possibly shortly after the Trinity War.
The Trinity, exactly. I have a feeling they'll probably drop him after that, which I have to say, I think it'll end up being a waste. There's so much more potential that this character has that's flat out just being wasted. Moving on back to the Marvel side, a number one from this week that we didn't talk about because you said you hadn't had a chance to read yet. I think you're going to borrow mine.
Right.
And that's the Avengers number one in the Marvel Now initiative. This one also was quite a bit of a disappointment. There were good pages and good panels in it that had their standard Avengers feel and heart, but overall it was just not enough. Even the first issue of the Uncanny Avengers, which came out quite I think was it last month or the month before, actually?
I think it was last month.
Was it last month?
Yeah.
That one, like, it didn't even have that much story to it other than team building, like kind of getting the posse together and setting up this is who it's going to be.
Which that Marvel now is partially to be.
Than this was.
It's partially they're doing that because they want to make these introduction books to Marvel. So you're getting a beginning with these books.
Yeah.
And so that's why that team building works so well. And if you add a story into that, it just makes it stronger.
Yeah. Whereas the focus on this book, it had the traditional Avengers for most of it. And the traditional Avengers get basically their ass kicked, and it flops over to, okay, we knew this was coming, so we set up a contingency that these new bodies can flush in and become the Avengers in their stead, and off they go. And that's it. That's all that really has to it. I think this was, again, like the other books I mentioned, a wasted opportunity that it could have done a lot more with, and it just didn't.
There's a number of books out there right now that I feel are kind of being wasted. Team 7 from DC is another one.
Mm-hmm. Grifter's basically been given the DC dildo, as far as I'm concerned.
And the,
poor character.
World's Finest is kind of struggling in that vein as well. And I'm wondering how many of these are fighting because they've been told, okay, in 2 issues, in 4 issues, you're going to be part of a crossover event. You're going to be part of a larger event. Mm-hmm. And so the writers are going, I can't build anything in the time that I have allotted. So let me do a couple of shorter, 2 arcs or 3 arcs that kind of establish an overarching story that's going to run for a year, 2 years.
Yeah, it'll pick back up after I have to deal with this thing I have to deal with.
Right.
Yeah, World's Finest and Earth 2 both fall into that category on the DC side.
Earth 2, not quite so much. A lot of what they're doing there is setting up for the team building. We're going to see a bunch of new characters starting to show up in Earth 2 now. They've kind of established a core for the Earth 2 Justice Society, and they're going to be pulling in a bunch more. So, I don't feel it quite as badly with that book, but certainly a lot of DC books are kind of, Detective Comics has kind of been struggling that way for me. The Dark Knight I dropped because it was feeling that way. I dropped because I didn't feel the story was connected to anything around it. Which is, kind of interesting because that's part of the reason why I like the Legends of the Dark Knight is because it's completely disconnected. But it feels connected in that it's a study of who Batman is as opposed to just a story that happens to have Batman in it.
Right.
Which is what The Dark Knight was. So, all right. Anything else for us on this?
No?
Or you think you've pretty much covered it. Okay. So, we'll go ahead and start moving in towards the news aspect of things.
Mm-hmm.
Disney, our favorite owners of LucasArts, have basically said, Stanley Media, screw you. Stanley Media is a company that Stanley at one point worked for and supposedly sold the rights to the Marvel characters that he created to. And Marvel said nope and actually had set up a claims and said, no, we've done this before. We've got this dismissed. It's already been litigated and rejected. $5.5 billion is what Stanley Media is suing for because of the amount of money that's been made by the movies, including the Avengers movie. So, Disney has basically said no. So now you've got Disney lawyers behind this. So, I think that's pretty much.
And they are a powerful force.
Yeah, that's pretty much wrapped up. I mean, if they could get copyright extended from till death, till 10 years after death. All the way up to currently 75 years after death. So.
Good God.
Yeah. Next story actually is a much bigger, much more impactful story. And this is Karen Berger has stepped down as Vertigo's executive editor. She has been with Vertigo since they formed and has directed Vertigo through some of the best, most award-winning series that have been in comics for the past 20 years.
Oh yeah, I mean, you look at things like, say, Fables, currently American Vampire, Swamp Thing had its run in Vertigo, as did
Gaiman with Sandman.
Absolutely. I mean, she has been the executive
editor
over, so many books. To see her go, I think is a huge blow, but she's been doing it for 20 years. I can understand she wants to kind of step out and either do something else or maybe just step away in total. I don't know how old she is. If this is a full-on retirement for her or not, but.
It doesn't appear to be this is a full-on retirement. It will be interesting. I'm wondering, if this was her choice to leave, because she sees opportunities elsewhere, or, she just decided she needed a break and is going to take a break and will probably come back. And, the other option is, she is going to be looking for jobs elsewhere. She's staying on for a while to help with her transition to the new executive editor. So it apparently is at least, a friendly departure with DC.
But unlike some others we've seen recently.
Yeah, well, actually, let's go ahead and skip down to that story and discuss. Although, actually, saying it's not friendly is kind of a misnomer, but Gail Simone has been removed as writer of Batgirl, which, to be fair, the only reason I was reading Batgirl is because Gail Simone was writing it. It's the only book she's currently writing for DC, and I had so much fun reading Birds of Prey and Sinister Six. Hopefully they'll give her something like Sinister Six with the New 52.
I don't know. From what I've seen and heard, I mean, she loves a lot of the people at DC as far as her contemporaries or the other writers and artists. I just don't know if she has been happy with the more administrative aspects of DC recently.
A lot of creative has been disappointed with the way that the editors have been treating them. A lot of last-minute changes. There is a new editor on the Bat books, and when he stepped in, he removed Gail from Batgirl. Her last issue will be in February, which will be the end of the Death of the Family arc. So she'll be in till then. And apparently she had stories at least plotted out for after that we won't get to see. Ray Fox will be taking over the next two issues after she leaves.
You know, I'll go ahead and run my flag up the flagpole now. If I want to see her go back, and if she can, do the Welcome to Utopia, I think it was.
Yeah, I know what you're thinking of. The her little side story. We actually wound up picking it up on the second run. She'd done a first volume.
Yeah, it was a second volume. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really, really good. I'd love to see her go back to that. It was a Wildstorm property.
Welcome to Tranquility.
Tranquility, yes, thank you. Because it was Wildstorm property, it should be owned by DC. She could jump back into it, maybe take it over to Vertigo, because I think that would be a really good place for it. I don't know, we'll see. Whatever it is she does next, she has a fairly devout following, yourself included, of course, that will follow her wherever she goes, so.
It could be interesting because with Karen Berger leaving, you know, Karen Berger might take up a job with Image. And could you imagine the creator-owned properties that step over to Image, particularly if Image wanted to get into some longer-form properties instead of just five or six runs?
Yeah.
But something along Why the Last Man, where you're going 70-something issues?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you have Chew over at Image right now that's going to be a 60-issue run.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Image doesn't have longer runs, but, yeah.
But they don't have anything, I think, that's ongoing, other than maybe like Hellblazer.
Yeah, the majority of their books are not continuous. Yeah, Hellblazer in Hell, yeah, Hellboy in Hell right now.
Dark Horse.
That is Dark Horse. Hellblazer is Constantine. That's over at Vertigo. And actually,
that's going to be coming to an end, isn't it?
Issue 300 will be the last book, and then the following month, Constantine will appear in the DC continuity with its own title.
That's March, okay.
I believe.
Oh, so they're going to fully move him over. That's interesting.
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion.
I didn't know they were doing the full shift. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are really upset because they liked the freedom that you had with the Vertigo adult books that they could do, the language.
Constantine's an adult character. That makes sense.
And so a lot of people are thinking that you're going to lose most of that audience. Some of them might pick up the first issue or two, but they're going to drop it because it's going to be more restrictive under the DC.
Well, yeah, they're going to pick it up, see that he's bubblegum, and just walk away.
Yeah. So, but hey, DC owns the character. He started in DC. They moved him to Vertigo. Yeah. They can move him back. So.
True.
All right. Speaking of kid friendly, Amazon has launched a kid friendly free time unlimited service. It's got a lot of Marvel and DC material content. You're talking TV shows, books, comic books. This is a subscription service from Amazon that you can get on your Kindle or on your tablet device that will provide your kid with plenty of kid-friendly content, which depending on your definition of kid-friendly, but for the majority of people, it's kid-friendly. Yeah, one of the things that's going to be featured in there is a lot of DC and a lot of Marvel material. So, it's going to be great. You know, if you get your kids on a tablet, as a parent, it's something that, Justin, you could look at and go, okay, I can set my daughter down in front of this. I don't have to worry about her finding something. Like if you put her on YouTube, she starts clicking on videos all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. that happened already. I had played a Chippendale Rescue Rangers, the intro song, and like two or three videos later, there was some chipping gadget action that was not appropriate for children.
I thought you were going to talk about the Patrick Swayze, Chris Farley, Chippendales dance off.
No, thank goodness she didn't get that far. That probably would have been next.
Chris Farley did win though, so.
Gotta oh, hell yeah. Points. Hell yeah.
Okay. This next story is probably going to crush your childhood. Yeah. But Bazooka Joe Bubblegum is rebranding. They're dropping Bazooka Joe, the character, and the strips. The character, I guess, will still exist, but they're not going to be putting out the strips in the bubblegum pieces anymore. So.
Oh! Yeah. That hit me right in the childhood.
Yeah. All those horrible, horrible little comic strips that you used to get with your bubblegum, gone. And,
who was writing those?
I don't know.
Honestly, I'm curious. Who actually wrote all those? Because you know they were recycling by this point. Like, the same dude couldn't be...
No, actually,
in his mid-80s, still cranking this shit out.
Actually, they think they had some new writers because I remember picking one up a couple of years ago, and it referenced something that was way too modern for it to have been a recycled strip. But, yeah. It's interesting that they're doing this. I think the big problem with Bazooka Bubblegum, I never could find it anywhere. Not that I was looking. But, yeah, if I did happen to go up to a cash register and there was a bubblegum there, I'd buy some Bazooka Joe. Not that I was buying it for the comic strip, but it was always kind of that fun little reward.
See, I always thought the problem with Bazooka Joe gum was that it was like chewing on a block of wood.
Oh, yeah, you did have to get it started, and it certainly was way too hard.
It worked better if you had a soda to go with it, you know, really rot your teeth.
Yeah, so something to just soften it up while you're drinking it, too.
Yeah.
But, all right.
Anyways.
A couple of upcoming books. For those of you that have missed some of the Marvel Now books or just don't want to pick them up, Marvel's going to be putting out a 688-page Marvel Now omnibus, which is going to feature all of the initial issues of the Marvel Now. So that's going to be, you know, stuff like Iron Man 1, Uncanny Avengers, Avengers number 1, as well as the mid-runs, stuff like She-Hulk, which switched main characters as part of its Marvel Now, but continued its numbering at that point.
Hmm. So, oh, that's right, because it's going to be following Betty Brant now, right? Or not Betty Brant, Betty Ross. That's
Betsy Ross, the Red Hulk. Yeah. So, yeah. It's going to be covering all of those first issues that were put out under the Marvel Now banner. So if you want those first issues collected in a nice hardcover omnibus edition, that'll be out in March of 2013, if you can wait that long.
I think I can.
Yeah, okay. Now, breaking right about the same time as the announcement of Karen Berger, Vertigo is reviving their Time Warp anthology series. So they're going to have new and established artists putting together just stories. I like this idea of an anthology series, particularly under the Vertigo line, because it really makes it unlimited as to where they're going to go, what stories they can tell.
Yeah. I mean, you end up getting some really kind of weird off the wall stuff in there, but some things that might really scratch an itch that you didn't even know you had.
Yeah. And that's what's great about reading an anthology is you can get introduced to a whole bunch of things. And sometimes, with these, you know, anthologies, something gets enough attention that it springs off and forms its own story, own title at that point. It's a great way for them to get a whole bunch of stuff out there to see what people are really liking. You know, the television, Liquid Television, which is coming back to MTV, Liquid Television was an anthology series of animation. And from that, we got things like Aeon Flux and Beavis and Butthead.
And Ren and Stimpy as well, if I remember correctly.
I don't know if that was actually part of Liquid Television or not, but it was, yeah. These
I do know it started on MTV. I know that much, at least.
Yeah.
Before I went over to Nick. Anyways.
Yeah. Well, Nick really didn't realize what they were buying, and they put the kibosh on a lot of stuff from the original Ren and Stimpy's to make it more kid-friendly. But,
And ruin it in the process.
But if you get, particularly that first season of Ren and Stimpy where it's still John Kay's work, there's a lot of cool stuff.
Oh god, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of kind of weird out there comedy, Captain Carrot is coming back with the new 52. He'll be reborn in
Threshold. This isn't related to the Flaming Carrot, is it?
No, not related to the Flaming Carrot.
Okay.
Captain Carrot is a rabbit superhero from the DC Universe.
Okay.
And apparently, if I remember correctly, very slapsticky, very, very meta comic book.
Kind of like Bucky O'Hare, tongue-in-cheek kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that would probably be pretty good as a summary. So.
Okay.
Yeah, just something to look forward to.
Oh, a couple of things I should go ahead and mention. Sure. First off, the Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes, the television series, has season 2 out on Netflix now. So if you'd watched that before and you want to catch up on the second season, now's the time to do it. The second season is also the last one. They've said they're canceling this and they'll be restarting the property with entirely new voice cast, entirely new animators and the whole spiel, as of next year, if I remember correctly.
Okay. I also know that, also on the cartoon front, the DC, Nation will be returning to Cartoon Network in January.
Oh, wonderful.
So if you've been missing those shows, Teen Titans and the little shorts that go between those,
yep.
The Green Lantern, those will all be returning in January.
Young Justice as well, I know is out there.
Yeah. Young Justice has replaced Teen Titans.
Yeah. I should also mention that Image right now is doing an Image First run where they're taking a whole bunch of their biggest selling properties as of right now, and they are re-releasing all of the number ones under this banner. So you can go back if you haven't read them and get things like Saga number one, Revival number one, I think Scalped. I know Scalped is Vertigo. Fatale, I know is another one.
Walking Dead.
Walking Dead as well. All these great, great Image properties that if you didn't catch it the first time around, now is definitely the time to do it.
I know Saga's on that list.
Yep. Oh. Yeah, I'm interested.
Okay, so okay, you mentioned it because I didn't hear it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But
moving on to some other fun stuff. Looking at games, Valve has announced that they are going to have a thing coming out called Big Picture, which will allow you to use Steam on your living room television. This is kind of a big deal because this is Steam's big toe being put into the gaming console arena, which such names as Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo have dominated in the past years. Steam, regardless of all of the other creators, has dominated the PC world for the past, oh, probably 4 to 5 years, I would think. Yep. So for them to finally kind of move and edge their way into the home console arena is a big, big move for them, and a bold one at that, to see if they can really hold ground against these other big names. Also, in the
well, actually, area, there's actually more on that Valve story, and that's that they have actually announced that they will be doing a console. So this is kind of their first leap towards that next step of doing their own console.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's not just, you know, being able to, you know, view your content through Steam on a big living room TV, but they're going to be releasing their own physical console that you'll be able to plug in at your TV as its own separate device, very much like an Xbox or a PlayStation.
So now it'll almost kind of be the point where when a title is released and everybody asks, oh, well, what system is it going to be on? Is it going to be Microsoft exclusive? Is it going to be Nintendo exclusive? That, with it being on Steam, is almost kind of, it's going to get rid of that question, because having it be on PC by now isn't even a question. If you're putting it on PC is the easy part. So for Steam to be able to have access to all of these properties and to kind of cut off that exclusive property, you know, cut off the pass, is, like I said, I mean, it's going to be game changing for them.
So, yeah, it could very well be. It could also fall flat on its face as people go, no, I do Steam because I'm playing it on my, you know, computer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not looking to play it on my TV. If I want to play it on my TV, I'm going to get it for my Xbox. Because for the most part, people that are using Steam are hardcore gamers, and a lot of them have a second system, whether PlayStation or Xbox, that they're using on their big screen.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
So. It could wind up falling flat on its face. And you've also got gaming systems like the Ouye, which was kickstarted, that uses Android as its operating system to make it a playable console for $100. That could also change that landscape.
Well, we'll see as far as which one ends up really getting the biggest push. Valve's got the name behind it already, and all really Gabe Newell has to do is say, hey, if you go out and buy a Steam console, I'll start working on Half-Life 3, and it'll sell like hotcakes.
Yeah, or just say that that's the only place we're releasing it.
Yeah, that'll be it. Done.
Yep. So it'll get all the console gamers to pick up one if they want to play it. So
there you go. You heard it here first. Valve console has confirmed Half-Life 3 is being developed.
This is a complete lie, and we did not confirm that.
So is every other claim that Half-Life 3 is confirmed.
Oh, yes, it's vaporware. All right, something that is not vaporware, but still related to games, something that is probably going to be very interesting for you, Justin,
mm-hmm.
Is that TSR is back. TSR, most of us know as being the company that originally put out Dungeons & Dragons, before mm-hmm. it was bought up by some other company, which was then bought up by Wizards of the Coast, which is owned by Hasbro. Yeah, so this TSR that's back has no relation to Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast, but it is actually run by the Gygax family, Gary Gygax being one of the co-creators of Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
TSR is going to be putting out Gygax Magazine. Gygax Magazine is both going to be online as well as a print magazine that's going to focus on gaming. Now, this, of course, is going to mean covering first and second editions of Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder, and Dungeons & Dragons Next. So very much into that core demographic that was Dungeons & Dragons when it first came out and what made it as huge as it is. Yeah, Advanced Dungeons.
I find it entertaining that they're basically saying they're going to use Pathfinder, which is Dungeons and Dragons 3rd edition, and 4th they're just completely leaving out altogether.
Yeah, they're going with what's most popular amongst the gamers second edition, that liked, 3.5 or, 3.75 3.5. As Pathfinder now is.
Yeah.
Yeah, D&D Next, which will be the new version, which is, I think, from what I'm looking at, it seems a bit closer to some of the older versions of D&D than it does to D&D 4th edition.
Yeah, it's a meshing of kind of all of them.
But yeah, they're also going to be doing some coverage of some other stuff like Cortex Plus or WH40K RPG, some other systems. Of course, the magazine is put out by Luke and Ernie, Gary's sons. Tim Kask, the original editor of Dragon Magazine, and Jason Elliott are all going to be the editorial staff for the magazine. And it's going to be focused very much on that gaming. So, do you think you're going to be able to find something in there that you'll enjoy reading?
I mean, definitely. No doubt about it.
Yeah, I think, for, a DM, it's going to be great for bringing out, what's great is this is going to be able to expand on all universes, not just one specific one. A lot of people look at Dragon Magazine and it's pretty much owned by Wizard and only covers Dungeons and Dragons, and that's 4th edition now. So it's only giving new characters and new designs for 4th edition. This will spread out, and while it won't be official to create some of these characters under the rules of others, it can still expand those universes. And if the house is willing to accept it, the house rules will allow you to play with some of the things that these expand into.
Yeah.
All right. So what else is going around on the internets?
Next up to talk about is something I saw early this month, which is called the Hawkeye Initiative. This had me laughing till I damn near pissed myself. The idea of the Hawkeye Initiative is the creators have realized the female action poses that exist in comics have become so ridiculous that they were going to start lampooning them by taking every bad pose they could find and redrawing the image, but putting Hawkeye in the female character's place.
Yep. So this is basically to show the sexism and how female characters are drawn.
Absolutely. Well, even beyond the sexism, just some of the impossible poses that they put them into.
Oh yeah, the broken back.
Oh, the broken back, the torsion, the legs going out in different directions. And as sad as it is to kind of say this, whenever they put Hawkeye in it, they always give him like the hairiest legs, a giant frickin' bulge. You know, they have his chest open, they're sticking chest hair on him and shit. I mean, it's just hilarious.
It really is. I first saw this on DC Women Kick Ass, which is a wonderful site that fights for women to be more representative in comics, both as creators and in the art, you know, how they're represented in the art, to be less sexist with that, as well as, to have strong, powerful female characters. So they covered this as, and I went and checked out the site, and there really is some great stuff. It's a Tumblr blog. If you've got some time, you could check out the Hawkeye Initiative. I actually didn't realize it was called the Hawkeye Initiative. I was first told that it was, Hawkeye in the poses of female characters.
Yeah.
So,
and they do accept submissions as well. So if you're an artist and you want to kind of throw your hat in the ring, have at it.
Yeah. The HawkeyeInitiative.com is the website for that. So you could check that out. And usually what they do is they show the original pose on one side and the redone Hawkeye version on the other side. So you could see them next
to each other. I swear, they always look like they're drawn in crayon.
Yeah. So.
That's great.
In the Defending Our Future department, scientists at Cambridge have actually put together a Terminator Studies department. This is to help prevent robot apocalypse from occurring. As we all know, robots are the single greatest threat that we all face. If we can't control them with Asimov's laws, we will face a Terminator Judgment Day. And so Cambridge has actually put together...
It's not robots themselves, it's AI specifically.
Yeah. The four greatest threats to humanity are artificial intelligence, climate change, nuclear war, and rogue biotechnology. And this whole department is set up to study and help find ways of preventing this from actually occurring. So
actually, I heard that fourth one, the rogue biotechnology, is actually a bit of a, not so much a misnomer, but a practical impossibility.
It depends on what you mean by biotechnology as well.
That one goes along the lines of like, I'm looking at that as what most people have called gray matter or gray mass, which is essentially like a nanite fluid.
Oh yeah. If you're talking about nanotechnology
and recreate. Yeah.
Nanotechnology is a virtual impossibility, but there are other uses of biotechnology, whether it's using actual bioluminescent creatures to create light.
Oh, okay.
Or using technology that we've taken from animals to be able to do something like collect solar energy and use that in to actually create electricity to run our buildings on. Yeah, so
Matrix style.
Yes.
There you go.
there's actually quite a biotechnology is not limited to specifically nanotechnology, although it could be Geordi's visor. Or the eyes that they gave him. So.
Yeah, if they have enough technology to put all that shit into a visor, they have enough technology to shrink it down so it could fit in a friggin' eye.
Yeah, well,
Go figure.
It's 24th century. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
That's also why Picard was bald, because Gene Roddenberry figured, this is 24th century. Nobody cares that he's bald.
Exactly.
So.
They got better things to worry about.
Speaking of space and space shuttles and spaceships,
we
should have one. And when I say have one, I don't just mean that replica you've got over in the corner of your room hanging from your ceiling. I mean a full-size replica of Han Solo's Millennium Falcon.
That's funny that you just projected that onto me when, in fact, you're the one that has the Millennium Falcon hanging in the corner of a room.
Okay, so...
I'm just saying.
Well, it's not just me. I know there's people out there probably listening to this podcast, many of whom have a Millennium Falcon hanging in their rooms.
Okay.
And but it's one thing to have it a statue or a copy of one. It's another thing to actually build a full-size Falcon. In Tennessee, they're building one. It's 31 feet tall, 114 feet long, and 81 and a half feet wide. So,
one and of the other large numbers.
Yes. When we say full size, we mean full size. They're hoping to be able to hold a maker camp or a maker school there where kids are going to be able to come and actually, you know, create things with their hands, you know, working. If you're interested in this project, you can go to fullscalefalcon.com and, you know, see what they're looking for. They're having people build individual set portions and send it in, such as somebody building the quad gun. And, you know, they'll take that and they'll use that in the making of the ship. So to find out what they need help with, you can find that out at fullscalefalcon.com.
Meh, they already did it in Minecraft.
Oh, they did it in Minecraft? Well, what, have they built a transforming car in Minecraft?
Probably not, no. The only moving parts in Minecraft are pistons, and those are a bit dodgy at best.
Yeah. Well, that somebody has actually built a transforming car in real life. Well, okay. It's not quite full scale.
But yeah, it's an RC car.
Yeah, but it's a 1/8 scale, 1/16 scale transforming car that actually drives as a car and then will transform and stand up on its own into a robot form and be able to walk.
Yeah, and be fully ambulatory.
Yeah.
So, I gotta admit, that's pretty fucking wicked.
They're actually doing a limited run on this, where they're 3D printing and putting together these things. It's a very limited amount. I think it's less than 100. And, you know, it takes about a month for them to 3D print and make them. So, sorry guys, won't get one for Christmas.
Nope. Not gonna be there in time. Sorry.
No. All right. So.
Couple of things to hit on that, I know I want to talk about. Listening to recent music, I've been on kind of a swing kick. I've been going back through my old Big Bad Voodoo Daddy and, Royal Crown Review and things like that. And then somebody sent me a link to something called Electro Swing, which I'd never heard of before. And I started kind of delving into it, and I found that this is really kind of neat. They're taking the old, or actually not the old, they're taking some of the Neo Swing sensibilities and applying it to electronic music. So the best example of this is a group called Electric Swing Circus, who do a cover of Everybody Wants to Be a Cat from the Aristocats movie, the old Disney one. That is really quite impressive. If you go on YouTube and search for Electro Swing Circus, you should be able to find it there. Otherwise, your music listening platform of choice, be it iTunes, Spotify, Grooveshark, or whatever else, may or may not have it there. It's not extremely popular. It doesn't seem like it's spread very far yet, but I'm going to go ahead and put the word out there now. This is something that you really should look into. It's very, very cool.
Okay.
A couple other things.
You continuing to talk about Electric Swing?
No, I was going to move on to books. But.
Okay. Because I got some other music to talk about since you're bringing up that. I was listening to somebody talk, and Brian Brushwood happened to mention he's been listening to baby metal, which sounds completely absurd. Baby and metal are not two things that should be going together. Metal should be loud and crazy, and I'm not even sure what baby would sound like as music. But apparently we looked it up and we found some on YouTube. If you actually search for baby metal, you can find a video or two on YouTube. This is a combination of heavy metal, obviously, and Japanese pop. So it's J-pop and heavy metal. And
I can see that because, I mean, there's a whole bunch of, I mean, there's already been like Japanese metal that they've used for anime intros. A perfect example would be something like the intro to Death Note.
Right. That's very, exactly very what we were thinking of when we started searching was Death Note. So it really is kind of an interesting dynamic, and the one video that we really enjoyed, they were kind of bouncing between a J-pop and then switching to much more heavy metal, but they still had elements layered throughout of both as they kind of switched back and forth between the genres in the same song. So that was really fun to check out. Now, I'll go ahead and we'll move you on since you were going to talk about books. I haven't been able to read much of anything other than comics recently, but apparently you have. So what are you reading? Well,
I did just because these were two that came out early this month, and there's was it early this month or late last month? No, I'm pretty sure it's early this month, which was the latest Dresden Files book, Cold Days, and the latest Iron Druid Chronicles book, which is Trapped. Both of these are in the urban fantasy settings. Dresden Files is in contemporary Chicago. Iron Druid is basically worldwide. The guy's kind of a druid. Yeah, he's a druid. You know, what can you say? I think I read Iron Druid in probably 24 hours, give or take. And Cold Days, I think I knocked out in closer to 12. Both are excellent books. Dresden Files, I just got my wife hooked on, and she's now working on the fifth book in the series. Just started that today, and she has been devouring these ravenously because they're just good, fun stories, and they're pretty easy reads, too. If you haven't picked them up yet, go out and find... you don't even have to find Stormfront, the first novel of the Dresden Files series. What you can go and get instead is find the graphic for Welcome to the Jungle, because that actually chronologically predates Stormfront.
Does it have fun and games?
It has Stygian hags.
Does it have everything you want?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. What was that name?
Oh, we know the names. So... That's a good one to come up with. I've talked before about the Dresden Files comic book series that Dynamite does. Stormfront, volumes 1 and 2 were actually done by Dabble Brothers before they got purchased or before they came defunct, whichever one it was. Those are both good. Full Moon was not as good. At least the story was spot on. The interpretation of the story was great, but the art I felt was really bad. I found out recently though why I believe that. Stormfront, the art was being done by, what was his name? Adrian, Saif, I think. Yep. Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So that art was a little bit better. Full Moon just, it couldn't compare. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, this is the guy that did Marvel Zombies. I mean, it's phenomenal, gorgeous art. Anyways, as extra comic news, there will be a new Dresden Files series called Goblin Games. I think that's right.
You said that's another graphic coming out?
Yeah, it's the next comic series for Dresden Files that will actually take place in between Full Moon and Grave Peril, which is the next Dresden Files novel. So they're going to do, they just finished Full Moon, now they're going to do Goblin Games, and then they'll go on and they'll do Grave Peril after that. So, it's kind of neat that they're taking these stories and putting them all into a graphic format as well, which, Jim Butcher, the author of the series, has said this is how he visualizes his character anyways. So it just kind of makes sense.
Well, I think you said when you looked at the graphic representation in the book, you went back and started reading the description of the character in the actual novel. And you started going, wow, this is actually identical to what the description in the novel is.
Yeah, I didn't realize I had been thinking of the character wrong the entire time.
Yeah.
So, go figure.
This goes to show how important comic books are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Another kind of neat thing to mention, something I'm going to be trying, I'm going to be doing this along with some other things. We've talked about fitness and kind of the manliness topics on the show before. I have just found the best body weight workout routine ever. It is the coolest thing. I'm going to be doing it. It's actually fairly simple. It's 2 pull-ups, followed by 2 push-ups, followed by alternating left and right lunges, 2
up,
of each.
Up, down, up, down, left, right.
Oh, no, up, up,
up,
down, 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 left, right, a bodyweight squat,
okay,
and a, crap, I'm trying to think what the last movement was. Oh, no, sorry, it was a burpee, followed by an air squat, which is a bodyweight squat.
Burpee, air weight.
B-A. Yeah, burpee, air squat. So B-A, and then you start it again.
So you go up, up, down, down.
Down, down.
Left, yep. Right. Left, right. B-A.
And then start it again.
All right.
It is the best workout ever based on the best code ever.
Yes. For those of you who didn't recognize the Konami code, used in many Konami games, probably the most famous variant is the one for Contra, mm-hmm. which gave you 30 men.
Yep.
So
very interesting, kind of neat type of thing. This came from nerdfitness.com, which also has a very, very good beginner's bodyweight workout that if anybody's looking to, cut a few pounds, you don't really have time to go to the gym, if you only have maybe 15 to 20 minutes in an afternoon or evening where you could actually do a quick workout in your living room, this is a perfect, perfect type of routine for you. Go to nerdfitness.com, look up bodyweight workout.
Yeah, bodyweight workouts are great because you don't need any equipment. They use exactly. your body weight.
Yeah.
So they're great for you to be able to do. You know, when you've, a lot of times you can do them. Oh, I'm in the office. I got 15 minutes before my meeting. Let me go ahead and do it.
Which is really kind of some of the best times to do it. Plus it just freaks the hell out of your coworkers, which in itself is still a little reward. Especially when you start doing bodyweight squats on your desk with your stapler held over your head and you start like grunting and, you know, hooting like an ape from 2001.
Right.
Not that I've ever done that. Another thing I wanted to hit on real quick, just to kind of run through it. I think I'd mentioned before that I was going to start doing some home brewing. I did, in fact, finally finish my first batch, which was a honey wheat from the Brooklyn Brewing Company.
The truth is he's been drunk on his home brewing, and that's why he hasn't been on the past couple of shows.
I will neither confirm nor deny that statement.
You don't have to.
The first batch that I made, came out well. It tastes like beer, which in itself is a win in my book. However, I realized, for any of those who do home brewing and hear this, you can understand what I'm saying. When I went to prime before going into the bottle, I screwed up my siphoning and I actually ended up losing about a bottle's worth of fermented beer before I actually mixed it into the priming liquid, which had already been calibrated for the full amount of beer that I had. So I ended up putting in too much priming sugar before I went ahead and bottled. So I came just shy of creating a full dozen worth of bottle bombs and instead now just have a bunch of ridiculously overcarbonated honey wheats that every time I pop the cap on one will overflow to the point that I lose about 3/4 worth of my beer. So I actually have to end up using about 3 glasses every time I open a single bottle just to collect all of the foam that's coming off of it and all of the head to condense down back into beer that I then pour back into each other so I can get one full 12-ounce beer out of it.
That sounds like fun.
It's ridiculous, but it tastes good, so I can't really complain too much.
As long as it came out tasting good, that's the big thing.
Yeah, I've only got a couple left out of the batch that I made, so I think my next one is going to end up being either a Scottish red or I'll do a English brown ale.
Oh, wonderful. Sounds good.
I think so.
Yes. All right. What else do you got on beer? Anything?
I've been drinking a lot.
All right. So in other news, situation normal.
I'm fucked up. Oh, wait, no.
And speaking of private snafu, the Army has one of the coolest things going on right now. They're testing an autonomous Black Hawk helicopter. They have basically...
See, I can't help but think that this is going to be a bad idea. I mean, we're catching flack for autonomous drones as it is, and those things are tiny. We're going to take an entire Black Hawk and automate it. Somebody somewhere is going to be pissed.
Oh, yeah. This is going... I don't know if somebody is going to be pissed. Somebody's going to be dead. And there's... actually, the pilots are going to be pissed because they'll be out of a job.
That's kind of... Yeah, I mean, they can't be that pissed when they're dead, but right before they die, they're going to be really, really pissed.
Yeah, but they're going to have a Black Hawk staring them down, and that ain't going to be fun.
Well, that's... I would be pissing. That's a little different.
Yeah. Yeah. And, certainly you've been pissed, in quite a different way because of all the beer you're drinking, so.
I stopped drinking over an hour ago. That's fair game.
I'm sorry. I just think, you know, an autonomous Black Hawk helicopter is pretty darn cool. So.
It is kind of neat.
So I figured I would share it with all of you. So. Yeah. Anything else you have, or are we ready to?
No, I, as you so aptly pointed out, I'm now out of beer, so it's about time to go.
All right, then we're going to go ahead and head out. You can find new episodes of Comic Book Tesseract available on the 1st and 16th of every month. If you want to reach us, you can find all of our contact information at about.me/comicbooktesseract. Our email, Twitter accounts, Google Voice, G+, Facebook, all of that's available from about.me/comicbooktesseract. Leave us a voicemail, send us a text message, all of that available at about.me/comicbooktesseract. For Justin Chalupka, I'm Jason Polyeth, and we'll see you next time we step inside the Tesseract.